Listeners, you're about to be joining our conversation with a truly amazing entrepreneur, Elise Thomas, founder of Cookie Company. Has a book out called Eat Dessert First, which I know a lot of people believe that this is the proper order of dining. But she's an amazing woman. She's done all of this out of her home kitchen with four children. my first question, Elise Thomas, of Eat Dessert First and of Cookie Company, is wherever do you find the energy to do all this?
I think I'm just honestly a high energy person because I run a lot. I love being busy. And, it's just my personality. I love always having something to do.
And right. It's fun. Your book talks about cookies. It talks about a lot more things than that, too. You talk about breads, meals, lunch, dinner, soup, salad, sides, dips, and so forth. And a lot about the these are easy recipes to execute when you're a busy person like you. Is that not correct?
Yes. That was one of my main focuses of making this cookbook is I wanted it to be recipes that the everyday person busy with a busy life could make. And a lot of them are family recipes and recipes that I have just come to make a lot, and they're all easy, they're all delicious, and so it's just perfect for just, they're not difficult as well. Like, I wanted to make sure that, you know, everyone can make them, because everyone wants a good homemade meal for dinner.
And easy to find ingredients, which is, I mean, how many times have we all started out on a recipe to realize we did not have the ingredients that we needed?
Yeah.
So, when did you start this? I mean, you grew up with, I assume it's a large family.
Yeah, so I have, there's five of us kids, two brothers, two sisters, I'm the fourth, and then I have a sister underneath me. And my mom, she worked full-time as a school teacher, and she still would always find time to make us a home-cooked meal every single day because we had a big family. And really, I've always loved kind of being there in the kitchen with her. But in about, like, fifth grade, I had kind of had some harder times with friends, just, like, making friends. I kind of just went through, like, a weird period of time where I was really having a difficult time making friends in my school class, and my mom decided to kind of do a at-home baking school, and she would call it Fifi's Kitchen, and she invited some girls over from my school class, and she would teach us how to do something new every week and got us aprons and, like, little hats and teach us how to do something new to kind of get me to have, like, some socialization and to make friends, but it kind of just, like, sparked my interest in cooking even more. So I used to pretend I was on cooking shows with my sister. We would pretend like we're being recorded, and we would tape ourselves
really?
And, you know, make all these things in the kitchen. And, like, I really love to be in the kitchen. I just have always really enjoyed it. It's kind of my happy place.
No, it's really funny. You have lots of ants. Ants seem to have had a big part in your growing up. But where are their uncles?
Yeah, that's funny. I actually do have an uncle that I would say a lot of my family are just, they're really good at baking. And in my recipe book, I actually have my Uncle Todd's mashed potato recipe.
He makes
amazing mashed potatoes. You boil them in cream and you use that cream to make them, and he makes them for Thanksgiving every year. They're he's really famous from in our family. My dad is from Idaho, so he is like a real meat and potatoes guy. So he's his brother. And so I incorporated a lot of.
You should introduce both of them to Joel Robuchon.
Yeah.
He's a famous French chef, and his mashed potatoes have more butter in them than they do potato.
Right? And that's why they're so delicious.
Exactly. Now, as I was something on the tip of my tongue I was going to ask you about, and I forgot what it was. But a lot of these recipes, I think we should say right out front, is this is not lean cuisine. Right?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So nobody should go into the recipes expecting that they're going to save on calories in any shape or form, right?
Yeah. I mean, there are some definitely healthier recipes in there, but a lot of them are, yeah, just delicious meals that your kids will like. I have marked in there, like, kids' favorites. So, like, my kids, the ones that are picky, like, I have, like, their favorites in there, and a lot of treats and a lot of things I love to host. So, you know, there's a lot of recipes that you can use when you're hosting people if you really want to impress them, but, you know, don't have all the time in the world, which is great. But, I mean, it's always going to be healthier when you're making it from scratch at home versus, you know, going to get fast food or something. So,
interesting, yeah. The when I say this, I think I'm calling them vintage. I mean, a lot of these recipes have been like a part of all of our lives for a long period of time. I mean, do you do that conscientiously? Consciously, or did you make a point of putting that into this particular book?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of them are just recipes. Like, I have two different recipes from each of my grandmas that they've, you know, would make for me, and a lot of my recipes that I grew up on, and then some recipes that I have just grown to love. And so they might be similar to some people's recipes, but like a little bit of a flair, a little bit of a change, you know, to them, to make them a little bit different. But for the most part, yeah, they're just really good home-cooked meals that you can make for your family and friends, and they'll all just love them.
Now, let's talk some specifics about it's an amazing success story, your story. As I said, you have these four children. How old are they now?
I have a 12-year-old daughter, a 9-year-old son, a 7-year-old son, and then I have a toddler, he just turned 3.
Wow, it's amazing. And you started a company. The company has spread so dramatically. Did you expect that?
No, not at all. When we started Cookie Co. back in, well, I originally had wanted to open in 2019 before, obviously, we knew about the pandemic. I had, dreams of opening up a bakery because it's something that a passion of mine is baking and just something I've always loved to do, like I had said before. So in 2019, I had 3 kids at the time. It's kind of when I really wanted to follow that dream. I thought, like, okay, this is my time now. My kids are getting a little bit older. I had been a stay-at-home mom for years, and started looking for a location in my hometown, Redlands, California. I found a great spot. We signed paperwork, signed the lease, started, you know, finding a contractor, all the things. And then in, early 2020, the pandemic hit. And in California especially, we had, like, very strict shutdowns. And so we kind of at that point were like, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? We had just put our savings into this, and we kind of just like still moved forward. But then my husband lost his job. He was in marketing, and he was kind of like in a startup, and everyone was very unsure about what was going to happen. So he lost his job. And so I started actually just before I even opened the shop selling my cookies from my house. And it became this thing where people would come get a box of cookies, and it just started with just a few people like on social media. And then soon, slowly, within a few months, it kind of blew up where I was baking sometimes until 4 o'clock in the morning.
Jeez.
I would teach my kids because they were online learning at that point. Like they were not in school because of COVID. So I would teach them. And then as soon as I was done teaching them, I would bake until sometimes 4 o'clock in the morning. And just for my little oven at home, I would be baking 1,000 cookies a week. And selling them, putting them on outside my garage on a table with people's names labeled so they can come and get them. And it was all COVID friendly. And it kind of just turned into this thing where people started calling me the cookie lady. They're like, I got to go get my cookie fix. And they would drive a half an hour away to come get their cookies. And, in between this time, I found out I was pregnant with our fourth child. And, it was kind of like a surprise for us. Lola had a little COVID baby. And so we're like, oh my gosh, we're pregnant. My husband lost his job. We're trying to open up this bakery. What are we going to do? And we just kind of just were like, well, we're all in, just burn the ships. There's nothing else we can do at this point. People aren't hiring and everyone's kind of unsure what's going to happen. So we ended up finally opening up in August 2020, our first flagship location in Redlands, California. And we had so much support from our community. We had a line around the corner the first day, and it just never really slowed down. It was just constant busyness. And so after that first year, we had a lot of people that approached us about wanting to franchise. And we had never thought about franchising. All of the recipes from our shop are my recipes. We're like, okay, well, we really have to figure out how we could dial this down and be able to have some stuff proprietary and, not give out my recipes to everyone and streamline this. And so we kind of thought about it and prayed about it. And we're like, okay, I think we can do this. So we started franchising in 2021. And so we have three locations of our own that we own in California. And then we have over 20 franchises spread throughout the country now.
Well, how did you learn the business side? I mean, I guess how you learned the baking side of it and the cooking side of it, but how did you learn so quickly the business side of it?
I mean, we were kind of just thrown into it, to be honest. My husband was never planning on being a part of the Cookie Co. When I first started, when I had told him I want to open up a bakery, I told him, I'm like, this is going to be my thing. I don't need your help. I can do it. And then once he lost his job, he kind of started helping me. But still, when we opened, he was still going to start looking for another job. It still wasn't going to be – I didn't know how big this was going to be at the time. I was just kind of envisioning a small-town bakery where I have a few customers here and there that I might be the only one baking and the only one, there. So then when – after the first day, which we were just exhausted, we walked into our warehouse. I'm pregnant. I think I was 3 months pregnant by then. I was just I turned to him and I was okay, you are full time cookie co now. I need you. And so he was all right. And so, he was a business major. He's always wanted to be an entrepreneur. So really he has helped with the business side a lot, and with the franchising, that is more of his thing, and then I'm more of the creative and the cookie part.
Well,
so I'm the one that's doing the recipes, making the new cookies and all that, and he's more the business side.
Well, let me back us
so
up.
So we kind of make a good team.
Let me just back us up just a second, because
yeah,
the title of your book is a little, in a sense, is a little bit misleading, because at least a third of the recipes are not dessert recipes. They're lunch and dinner recipes.
Yes.
So if people are going to buy the book, they should realize they're buying a very complete book.
Yeah, so it's not just desserts, which I think eventually I would love to do just an all desserts cookbook, but I really wanted to do something that had incorporated, everything, and so I'm hoping that this can be a series, Elisa's Home Kitchen, and then Eat Desserts First, and we put the desserts at the beginning of the cookbook because, oftentimes, I eat a cookie for lunch, and I'm like, I'm an adult. I can eat sweets when I want to eat sweets. So I'm all about, hey, if you want to eat dessert first and that makes you happy, then do it. I say,
yeah, I'm always in awe of people. I don't have any sweet tooth at all, and I'm always in awe of people who love sweets, and it's just, so satisfying for them to be able to chomp into a chocolate chip cookie or so I'm envious, I guess is the word for it, because I don't get that same high.
Among the latest excitements in the whole marketplace of food is
what?
I've forgotten the word.
Tell me what it's about.
It's about popcorn. Popcorn.
Oh, yeah, popcorn.
I got it.
Why all of a sudden is everybody into popcorn? I think that's so odd.
Have you noticed that?
I haven't. I mean, I love popcorn, so I'm all about it. But I did put my mom's famous caramel corn recipe in this book.
Yeah, I saw it.
So good. And it's funny because growing up, my dad would be the one that would make the caramel corn at Christmas time. We would make caramel corn, and we would take it to, neighbors and friends or whatever. And we would always see him making it because he loves popcorn. He's a big popcorn fan. And so he'd always want it, so he would make it. And so when I was putting the recipe in my book, my mom and dad were kind of fighting over whose recipe. I was I'm going to name it. I'm should I name it after dad? And my mom was you better not. It's my recipe. And I was yeah, but dad was the one that was always making it growing up. And she's yeah, because he always wanted it all the time. But
I'm glad
it's easy enough that a dad can make it, okay? And it's delicious.
Yeah. You say these are your recipes. What about the magic cookie bars? They seem to be fairly among the more complicated things that you have in your book.
Yeah, so I mean, I think that one is a pretty common dessert, but this is the recipe in there is how I make it. It's actually really not that hard. It's really delicious. It's just like a graham cracker crust, and it layers. So it's pretty easy, and it tastes really good. I even have, because I love the magic cookie bar so much, we actually have a cookie that I created at my shop that's called the Magic Cookie, and it's a cookie that kind of tastes like a magic cookie bar. But yeah, it has the chocolate chips, and it has sweetened condensed milk and coconut and pecans and butterscotch. It's really good.
You seem to have fun with the names. You named all these things, your mom's scotcheroos.
Yeah.
That was cute. So did you do those, or did you have your kids help with that?
I did most of the names. I thought it's kind of fun to do things because, everyone some people have Scotch roux that they make, you know, around whatever, summer, 4th of July. And my mom always makes Scotch roux, and I know a lot of people make them. So I kind of just did a play on that, like your mom's Scotch roux.
Uh-huh.
Cookie, and I named a few things after my children, like their favorite things, and that was kind of fun. And like my key lime pie, I kind of named it Take Me Back Key Lime Pie because my husband and I went to Key West, Florida when we were like probably 6 years ago for an anniversary, and we fell in love with the key lime pie. We were like on a mission to find like the best key lime pie there.
Yeah.
And we tried so many key lime pies. And so when we got home, I had bought some like key lime juice there. I was like, I want to recreate what we had and make the best key lime pie. And so I spent like a few days creating this key lime pie. And my husband is like, yes, this is it. He's like, this is even better than the key lime pie we had there. And we took it to a bunch of friends, and they had, like, texted me, like, oh, my gosh, this is the best key lime pie I've ever had. I'm like, I was working on it. I did a lot of taste testing and a lot of creation in the kitchen to figure out how to make the best key lime pie. So that was kind of like a take me back.
So I can use this recipe to make the best key lime pie?
Yes, you can.
Okay.
You'll impress.
I'll try it. I like key lime pie.
Yeah, it's delicious.
The other thing is your presentations are creative. And it seems to me that only somebody who caters to four children would be able to come up with some of these presentations. Like I'm looking at Abby's Funfetti birthday cake, which is certainly fun.
Yeah.
And what are the little symbols you have with each recipe?
Like on the side?
On the side.
Yeah, so on the side they kind of say like if there's a kid's favorite, it has like how many servings it has how long it takes to make each recipe. So then it kind of help you figure out, you know, what you have time for. Oh, my kids might like this one because this is a kid's favorite. Things like that.
You have a bun cake. Everybody's got to have a bun cake. But yours is the ultimate chocolate bun cake, and it looks really luscious.
Yeah, it is. It's fun to make for a party or an event at your house.
Now, how did you decide what savory recipes to include? Are these things you just do every day or what?
Yeah, I mean, that was definitely hard for me. I have actually a lot more recipes that I wanted to include, but we had, you know, a limited amount of space that I could have, and I wanted to make sure that there was a picture for every single recipe because I feel like if you don't have a picture of the recipe, who's going to want it? You know, you have to have that picture to show it. So then I kind of just decided to kind of have a variety of different things. So,
yeah. Well, I like the fact that you included photos of your kids stuffing their face with them.
Yeah.
They look like fun kids. What do they think of this whole ride?
They love it. They think it's great.
Great. So mom's an author, and not only that, but you get to eat all the experiments.
Yes, they had plenty of fun eating all of the food I had to make for the photos.
Yeah. Now, did you discover anything new, like new, something you hadn't explored before? What in the process of writing this cookbook did you learn or experience?
I honestly, it was much more work than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, for sure. No, I did one of these. It's terrible. I swore never again to do another one.
Yeah, like it definitely was a lot more like, a way bigger undertaking like than I thought. I really wanted to create a cookbook, and I'm like, okay, I'm just going to do it. And then once I got under the wire, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is very time consuming. And then when I had to get all the photos for all of the recipes, I mean, I had to make 130 recipes, and I'm a perfectionist. So it's like some of them, you know, I'm like, I can't be rushed. And like you said, I have four children. So I had to do it, like I had a period of time that I could do it. So I'd be like doing recipes like 3 days in a row, and then I'd be making stuff all night to make sure that it's ready for the next day. And I had to be like, okay, I can make this amount of desserts and do this. So it was very time consuming, but very rewarding. Once I saw the book, I was like, okay, this is worth it. Now I just need people to buy it, so it's actually worth it.
Yeah. I mean, some of these things that we sort of tend to think of as routine, you transform them, such as your slumber party broccoli salad, which doesn't look like any broccoli salad I threw together.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah.
But one thing that my kids will actually eat is broccoli. But
oh, great.
It has bacon and sunflower seeds and has dried craisins and a really delicious dressing, and it's one of my favorites. I can eat the whole bowl by myself.
Oh, it
and
looks wonderful.
Relatively,
yeah.
Relatively healthy, besides like the bacon.
Uh-huh.
Now, you particularly like angel hair pasta.
I love angel hair pasta.
One of your aunts, was it, had a particularly good version of it?
Yes, it was actually my grandma. My grandma Williams, my dad's mom, was a fabulous cook.
Angel
she had five
pasta.
Boys. She made everything homemade, every single thing from scratch all the time. And I went there one spring break growing up, and she would start from the beginning in the morning. The night before, she would say, what do you want for breakfast? And she would write the list down. I mean, anything that your heart desired. She would, biscuits, you know, this, that, like, I mean, it was like a full experience. And then she would go out to her garden and get like everything she needed. And my grandpa would go get whatever he needed from the store, and she would bake all these fabulous things. But one of her recipes that I think all my cousins and stuff used too is this angel chicken, and it's delicious.
Right.
We like it over noodles, but you can also have it over rice.
Yeah.
Some of my kids don't like noodles, so we do it over rice too, and it's really good.
Now, are there things in this book that your kids actually hated, but they still the recipe still made it into the book?
You know, some of my kids are much pickier than others. It's really funny. Like a lot. That's why I like a lot of things that can be deconstructed. Because I have one child that hates rice, and then I have another child that loves rice, and then I have a child that will eat everything. So a lot of my meals, you can tell, like, can be deconstructed, where it's like you can, you know, the sauce is separate from the, you know, the noodles or the rice or the potatoes or whatever it might be, so that you can kind of appease everyone in your family. So it's like,
good.
If they don't want the rice, they can have the meat and the veggie, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I guess fitting in with that is your recipe here for mass guacamole stuffed chicken. You can have a little of everything with that.
Yeah, that's my husband, the one thing he's ever made. And he
it's
will,
that one.
And I named it after him because of our whole entire marriage, he has never step foot in the kitchen to cook. But
oh,
one
really?
Time he saw this stuffed chicken with bacon on it somewhere. And he's like, we got to make it. We got to make this. And I'm like, all right, let's do it. You do it. And he's like, all right, I'm going to do it. And
you told him to do it.
And now he will never let me live it down because he'll be like, I cook. And I'm like, what? And he's like, my stuffed chicken, my stuffed guacamole chicken with the bacon. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to name this after you, Matt.
Yeah, it's not that, I mean, it's not as simple as you would expect for a non-cooking male to make.
Yeah, and I mean, and he was able to do it, so.
Hey, I feel like Matt, because Ann asked me this morning, would I cook a chicken for dinner tomorrow? Because we have a friend coming over.
Yeah. So anyhow, so your next book is going to be what?
I'm hoping that my next book is going to be a children's cookbook.
You know, they're really very popular. That,
yeah,
I mean, that's
I
a category that's really
that.
Popular right now. And I'm rather amazed. I was, I didn't know all this was happening until our grandchildren became an age where they were interested in the kitchen. I mean, I was really, I was surprised. I mean, because growing up, I never cooked anything.
Yeah.
Nothing. And, I mean, it wasn't expected of me. Nobody encouraged it or anything. So, I mean, I remember being on my own in college trying to feed myself and my friends. It was pretty awful. I mean, I think I knew how to make a roast chicken with canned cream of mushroom soup. I think that was about it.
Mm-hmm.
It can get very, very boring to have that all the time. So if you were to do, or when you do, your next cookbook, what's one thing that you learned from this cookbook that you would never do again?
Oh, man. That's hard. I don't know if I can. I don't know if I can prevent it because it was very difficult to do with a toddler. But I mean, there's some things I just can't. I can't ship them off for a week. So I think you know. I'm excited about the next one because I want to do some videos with it that will.
Oh, nice.
I could put on YouTube, like with a QR code that will show kids. Like the step-by-step, an easy way to make, you know, recipes for themselves. So that will be really exciting. And as for this one, I feel like I don't know what I would do different. I feel like
you probably did pretty good
considering I blocked it out because it was like so
I understand that feeling, yeah. But the thing that the secret I learned from my own grandchildren is a lot of these cookbooks, even the ones intended for kids, tell them what to do, but they don't explain why. And then somebody sent me a cookbook that explained the why behind the instructions. And the kids went nuts over that, being able to understand why to do that. A hint. So, well, I enjoyed talking to you, Elise. I mean, you're full of energy. I'm still wondrous at your ability to do this. Listeners, again, it's Elise Thomas, who's founder of the cookie company, and you'll get your top cookies in this book, plus a whole lot more. And it's called Elise's Home Kitchen, which I believe probably describes a series of cookbooks, and this one is called Eat Dessert First, and I dare anybody who doesn't believe that to be absolutely the law of the land step forward. Thank you for taking the time to talk to us, and much success on your book.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Well, it was fun. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Yes, listeners, and you're going to be talking to Michelle Mayfield. of Beatrice Bakery. We've had a lot of Beatrice Bakery products roaming our house for quite some time now, so it'll be really interesting to talk to Michelle. Michelle, you are the marketing chief, are you?
Yeah, I am I'm the national sales executive in the marketing department at Beatrice Bakery.
Great. Let's start with, where is Beatrice Bakery?
Sure. Beatrice Bakery, or we call it Beatrice, but it's
oh, Beatrice.
Oh, yeah, that's okay. Beatrice. It is interesting. Not sure how that came to be, but we're located in the southeast corner of the state of Nebraska. We're about 45 minutes south of Lincoln, the capital of Nebraska, and about an hour and a half south of Omaha.
Well, now, how did this company, in the middle of nowhere, get to be this major online bakery throughout the whole country?
Sure. So there were a couple of brothers that had immigrated from Germany, and they were originally set up in Missouri, in St. Louis, and they found a recipe for their grandmother's fruitcake in an old trunk, and they started producing it in Missouri, but they outgrew that facility, and so they started hunting in the Midwest for another location, and that's when they came to Beatrice. And we've been producing the fruitcake as Beatrice Bakery since 1964.
Wow.
The recipe, is over 100 years old. It's from 1917.
Yeah, well, as marketing director, you should have done a major promotion here. I mean, because you ship all over the United States.
We do. We ship all over. We've really ramped up our brand awareness the last couple of years. So, fruitcake has been around forever, but we feel that ours is a little bit unique in that we don't use any citron or orange peel. And so we wanted to make sure that people were aware that they could get a quality fruitcake, that's something that tastes good and not something that you re-gift or use as a doorstop. So we have really ramped up our
you know all those stories about, stories about the fruitcakes that keep being shipped around and re-shipped around.
Re-gifted every year,
Omaha has a very well-known citizen who's in the finance business.
Yes.
Does he buy your cake?
I hope so.
Who is that rabbit?
I should send him one and make sure he has had ours.
You absolutely should. Warren Buffett is the head of what's the name of the company again? I forget now.
Berkshire Hathaway.
Berkshire Hathaway. Oh, that's who it is. Okay.
And he's very rich, so he can afford lots of cake.
He can. I'll send him his first one for free, and then he can buy the rest of them from there.
he can certainly afford to do that, as you said.
Yeah, well, I have a list of the what you sent us as samples. It's the Southern Pecan Ring, the chocolate squares, the Grandma's Fruit and Nut Cake Bar box, and
ring.
Another ring of a chocolate rum liqueur cake ring.
Yes.
Now, and Peter's the one to really talk about this because he's the one who ate it all.
he must have liked it then.
What is it about fruitcake? You must know better than me. What is it about fruitcake in the United States? In my native land, The mother of the house made the cakes herself.
Yes,
my sister started making hers according to her about to be mother-in-law's recipe. And if she didn't do it right, the wedding was off.
The funniest thing was they used to have these bachelor boxes. And our relatives in England would send us a piece of the wedding cake, which was a fruit cake, in one of these bachelor boxes. And you know how it would come through the mail. I mean, it was all chewed up. And it was, I can't even imagine what we were supposed to do with it.
Yeah, not sure if you want to eat it after it's
pressed. Oh, we never touched it. No.
But anyway, the secret is the original recipe was from Germany.
Yes. And there's three different alcohols. So we put bourbon, brandy, and rum in our fruitcake.
Oh,
and
wow.
So we have all three of those. Brandy is the most prevalent, but we put bourbon, brandy, and rum, and then it's 67% fruit and nuts. So there's not a lot of cake or batter there, but it's really loaded with the good quality fruits and nuts. And
Did we get a sample of this one?
That would have been the one-pound grandma's bar box.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yep, that's the original fruitcake.
Okay.
That's the original. We do get a lot of calls from people that this will remind them of, you know, nostalgia, family tradition, we love fruitcake, things like that. A lot of fruitcake companies do put citron and orange peel in their fruitcakes. We do not do any of that. So I think that sets us apart from a lot of the other fruitcake companies that are out there. We don't have that bitter citron in our fruitcake.
The funny thing is I vaguely remember my sister's recipe from Mrs. Benson contained potatoes.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
In some quantity, although dried fruit was really the staple.
Yes.
So it was.
Yep.
So it was,
definitely.
Was raisins and sultanas, and things like that, and some nuts.
Yep. We put almonds, pecans, walnuts, pineapple, cherries, dates, and raisins.
And it's good.
No.
Yeah.
How did you end up working as a marketing director for a bakery? Are you do the background?
Well, I'm a native. Yeah. So I like to tell people I work here because we are the largest consumer of alcohol in the state of Nebraska.
Well,
because we put so much of it, in our cake.
Yeah.
The funny thing is my mother-in-law, Anne's mother, used to make a cake she called bourbon cake. And the outstanding thing about bourbon cake was that it only had one liquid ingredient.
It was bourbon.
Which was all granddad. It had to be all granddad.
That's funny that you should say that.
And she had a
special... Because the only liquid we... Oh, I'm sorry.
That's the one liquid what? You started to
that's
say?
That's the only liquid that we put in our grandma's original recipe is the bourbon, the brandy, and the rum. That's the only liquid ingredient.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you. And then not only did you make it, it had its own special tin for storing it and the plate for putting it on and all this stuff. And the baking thing with the stuff in the thing in the center, and then you had to feed it. You had to keep pouring the liquid over the cake as it aged.
Over the cake, right. So yeah, we make those. We age them for anywhere from 6 to 9 months, depending on what size of the cake it is. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, that would mean it's pretty well fermented, so it's probably very healthy.
Let me tell you a really funny story. My mother used to make her cakes, her Christmas cakes, as they were called, and we would open them at Christmas. But one year she forgot to put in the sugar, and she doubled the flour. So there was a gathering of the family. Quite a lot of members of the family were there for a special occasion. My mother used to entertain on Christmas Eve, because it was my sister's birthday. But the fruitcakes were opened, and they were dry as all get out.
Oh no!
Because of the mistake with the recipe.
Yet you won't forget that.
Now the other thing, and this is interesting. Do your cakes have icing on them?
No, we do not put icing on them.
A true British Christmas cake, and a British wedding cake, for that matter, has cake in the middle with the fruits, as we mentioned, but it has marzipan and sugar on the outside.
Okay.
And that
yeah,
that,
so
that,
you could say ours isn't British, but yeah, we do not do the icing or the frosting.
There you go. But you're prospering in Beatrice, Nebraska, nevertheless.
Yes, we are. We've been here for, like I said, since 1964, and we can make anywhere from, you know, depending on how sales are for the year, 750,000 to 950,000 pounds of cake each year.
Good grief. Amazing.
That's a lot. Yeah.
Marie Antoinette would be proud, right?
Yes.
People order it. I mean, you have a brick and mortar place too, huh?
Yes, that's where the factory or the production facility is located here in Beatrice. And then just about 2 years ago, we purchased a building that is in the same block. And so it's just across the parking lot. And that's where we have our marketing and sales team. And also we have a store so people locally can come in and purchase the cakes from us here. But everything is made right here. We're all in the same location here in Beatrice.
Well, you know, the packaging is so specific. I mean, there was nothing ruined in the mail at all when we got these samples. So you must have invested a lot of time and effort and money into getting the proper packaging.
Yes, and I've only been here 3 years, and so I'm not sure how many trial and errors they've had with packaging, but what we're doing now works really well. We keep them in a cooler until we ship them, but everything that we ship out, no matter where it's going to, we ship it ambient or at room temperature, whatever the temperature of the truck or it's whatever process it's going through, you know, UPS, FedEx.
But we don't
have a lot of trouble.
And we have to put it in the refrigerator when we get it? No, there's some requirement there because we did not put all of it in the refrigerator.
Right. The main reason to put it in the refrigerator is because it will slice much easier.
It
won't, it won't crumble if it's chilled. And if it's at room temperature, it tends to crumble a little bit. I mean, you can eat it chilled or room temperature, but we said when you're going to slice it, it's best if it's chilled. It cuts into nicer slices.
Well, now, when we interviewed them, the fruitcake company in Texas, they said, I mean, that's supposedly the biggest fruitcake provider around.
Right.
They said that when they were baking it, the whole town smelled of fruitcake. Is that the same thing with yours, too?
Yes, you can go outside and take a whiff, and you'll know what we're cooking that day, whether it's chocolate rum or some of our breakfast breads smell really good when they're baking. And we have had other, neighbors in the area that have insurance business or the gas station or whatever, they'll ask, oh, what are you cooking today? Because they can smell it. So same thing happens here.
Wonderful.
Now, what about the chocolate cake? The chocolate cake was really different.
The chocolate rum?
The chocolate rum cake, yes.
Yeah, so that's a special process.
That didn't come from Germany.
No. No, we created that one. We have a line of liqueur cakes, And so we take we make a batter, and we bake the cake. And as soon as it comes out of the oven, while it's still hot, we inject it with a warm butter rum syrup. And
wow.
You'll get that moisture in the ring. Yeah, we hand inject those, but we have to do it while they're still hot out of the oven. And so we have the chocolate rum. We have the vanilla rum, lemon drop, which is a vodka syrup. And then we also just created a new one. It's called chocolate raspberry rum. So it's got a raspberry liqueur that's injected.
Okay, now I understand that cake a little better.
You're going to be sending out a sample by way of promotion. Do you have any big time glamorous customers that help promote it?
We had a gal that was on one of the social media sites. I can't remember her name. Well, I don't know of any celebrities per se, but we do have some bigger customers that maybe you wouldn't think of. We do sell it in Dillard's, in Macy's.
Okay.
Bass Pro Shop, Vermont Country Store is another big customer of ours. And then a lot of the grocery stores take our cake as well. But we're pretty seasonal. Our busy time is usually, we're making it now, so it's ready for the end of the year. But that's why we have the other lines of cakes to try to, fill in that time when people aren't craving fruitcake.
When you have a website, and that's how people get a hold of this, the
yes.
cake.
Yep. www.grandmasbakeshop.com.
Grandma's
Bake Shop.
Spell it, Michelle.
Bake Shop.
Sure. Yeah. Yep. Grandma's Bake Shop. It's GRANDMABAKE.
Oh, not. There's no S.
No. I better double check that for you. But they can also do a search for Beatrice Bakery, and it will come up that way as well. But we did change our website. It's www.grandmasbakeshoppe.com.
Oh, let me write that one down. PPE. Okay, .com. Got it. All right. Well, anyhow, I'm glad we finally got a hold of you.
Yeah, it's been great to visit with you guys.
Yeah, well, it's fun. And, it's a big business. I mean, it's amazing.
It is.
Yeah,
it is.
I know.
Don't think people really like fruitcake until you work in the fruitcake business. And, yep, there's a lot of people that still crave it and still want it.
Yeah. Well, yours travels better than the wedding cakes we get from the UK.
That's good to hear.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, thank you for taking the time to talk to us, and I'm glad we've finally connected. And so talk to you again soon.
That sounds wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Michelle. Bye-bye.
You bet. Bye-bye.